It's time for the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use. Suggested that you have a pencil and paper handy. That way you can write down names, addresses, telephone numbers, email, and web addresses so that you could take action with what you hear. First thing to take action about is get your butt to the Earth First Round River Rendezvous for 2013. It's going to be held in North Carolina, July 1st through the 8th. The Round River Rendezvous is the annual gathering of the Earth First movement. Each summer, this week-long campout attracts several hundred Earth Firsters from around the world. Gathering is coordinated by the Volunteer Committee, which is Croatan Earth First this year, and they have lined up some workshops. They'll have campaign discussions, campfire music, and a rally with performers and speakers. Perhaps the most important part of the Round River Rendezvous is the informal networking that goes on. These gatherings are particularly important for developing a cohesive activist network and planning actions on a local level. Croatan Earth First will be hosting this summer's rendezvous in Central North Carolina. The exact location will be announced on the website. The spot we are choosing should have swimming holes and beautiful woods to hike in. And as for new content, we'll be offering more earth skills, plant and mushroom identification, eco-spirituality workshops, as well as medic trainings. You have to sign up for those ahead of time, okay? And they're also looking for new folks to host workshops and submit ideas for panels and workshops you'd like to see. They're suggesting you make a donation at WePay. And if you need to contact Croatan Earth First, email to cef@riseup.net. That's cef@riseup.net or croatanearthfirst@gmail.com. And if you want all the information you could possibly get, including the tentative schedule, the anti-oppression statement, and how to get there, will be posted at 2013summerrondy.wordpress.com. That's 2013summerrondy, R-O-N-D-Y, at wordpress.com. And Uncle D won't be there because I'm going other places. The California Native Plant Society, Santa Cruz County Chapter Habitat Restoration Team is having a restoration this Saturday, June 15th, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Sunset Beach State Park. Summer is here. No, it isn't. They're still a week away. Summer is drawing near, and we're back at this special beach to continue our work on summer mustard and maybe pull out a little radish and some invasive ice plant on the rear coastal bluff. Dune flora will be in splendid form. And keep an eye out for snowy plovers, dolphins, and legless lizards. See you there, Linda says. How to get to Sunset Beach goes south or east on Highway 1, whichever you prefer. For 9 miles out of Santa Cruz, then take the San Andreas Road exit. Go right onto San Andreas Road for about 5 miles. Look for the turnoff to Sunset Beach State Park. And it doesn't look like much. When you get there, head down, make a right turn and head down the road to the kiosk. Explain that you're going to do volunteer work and habitat restoration and have them give you a parking slip for your vehicle. Drive on up the left-hand side road into the lower day-use parking area by the beach. We'll meet at the south end of the parking lot. Linda's driving a silver Honda Civic hatchback if it still runs. And she will have tools and gloves for you there. The Habitat Restoration Team is an all-volunteer group working to restore native habitat in the parks and protected lands of Santa Cruz County. Their program provides an opportunity for people to learn about the natural systems that surround them while helping to restore special and wild places. No prior work experience is necessary. Just show up at the park. They welcome individual volunteers from 8 to 80. Wear your comfortable layered clothing, bring something to drink, and lots of enthusiasm. They work rain or shine or fog. And if things get particularly unpleasant, they'll call it a day. Tools are provided. Bring gloves and water. If you want more information, contact the program leader, Linda. Her number, 831-462-4041. That's 462-4041. You could email her at redwoodrn. That's R-E-D-W-D-R-N at pacbell.net. Or go to the webpage, www.cruzcnps.org. That's CRUZCNPS.org. And the Animal Liberation Front has launched its fur farm raiding season with the final nail, number 4. The Complete Guide to Destroying the Fur Industry contains a fur farm list, a how-to guide on raiding fur farms. And this story by the Animal Liberation Press Office.org. The Animal Liberation Front is announcing the release of The Final Nail Number 4. Every time a new edition of The Final Nail is released, it is followed by a wave of fur farm raids. In the 6 months after the release of The Final Nail Number 1, there were 16 fur farm raids. Prior to its release, there had only been 5 in U.S. history. In the 3 months after the publication of Final Nail Number 3 in 2008, there were 3 raids on fur farms whose addresses had first been made public in its pages. June 1st has come to be known as the launch of fur farm raiding season, when mink born on fur farms may begin to reach maturity and can be released into the wild. The authors intend this latest Final Nail to set off fur farm raiding season by inspiring a new wave of liberation. This week, hundreds of copies of The Final Nail Number 4 were mailed anonymously to animal rights groups nationwide, and digital copies are posted on download sites online. So if you're interested in fur farms and want to get the latest word, Final Nail Number 4 is available somewhere for you. And here's the Kitua Earth First report back from their week of resistance to genetically engineered trees. Last fall, when our friends at Global Justice Ecology Project informed us that Nashville, North Carolina had been chosen as the site of the International Tree Biotechnology 2013 conference, we felt a little fire spark in our bellies. Was this group of scientists and industry hacks really arrogant enough to come to our home in the beautiful Blue Ridge Mountains to threaten our native forests with monocrop plantations of genetically engineered trees? Did they really think they would come here without us spoiling their party? We took it as a challenge, and after an inspiring week of protests at the end of May, we are pretty sure those mad scientists won't be meeting in Asheville ever again. Our first victory came a month before the conference even started, apparently fearing the protesters would follow them wherever they went. The conference organizers canceled a group trip to a test plot of genetically engineered eucalyptus trees. While the counties in which those test plots are planted are publicly known, the exact location of these mutant trees is a closely guarded secret. It seems they don't want a mob of Earth Firsters to find out where they are. Fast forward a month to May 27th, the opening day of the conference. The notorious tree engineer Woot Bujran was scheduled for a keynote speech titled Engineering Trees for the Biorefinery. Wout didn't even get a chance to start speaking before two protesters who had managed to infiltrate the conference started chanting anti-GE tree slogans and making heartfelt speeches. The conference organizers were forced to clear the entire conference room of over 200 participants as security chased the protesters around the ballroom. Wout's talk was disrupted for at least 30 minutes, and the conference was forced to significantly increase security for the rest of the week. Not bad for a two-person protest. Both protesters were arrested and charged with trespassing. Hours after the disruption, we began our teach-in on GE trees and extreme energy, where a large crowd got educated on the ecology of southern forests, the dangers of GE trees, and biomass incinerators. The evening ended with an excellent panel discussion that tied the fight against genetically engineered trees to struggles against nuclear energy, fracking, mountaintop removal, mining, and tar sands oil. On May 28th, the second day of the Tree Biotech Conference, nearly 200 people took to the streets of Asheville to protest GE trees, chanting, GE tree, tear them up, ArborGen, shut them down, and hands off our forests. After a brief rally, the loud and spirited crowd in costume and with colorful puppets marched to the Renaissance Hotel where the conference was taking place. For over 3 hours, the crowd chanted, sang, and directly confronted conference attendees. According to our mole inside the conference, the protests could be heard inside the conference hall, and the focus of the evening presentation spontaneously became how to deal with the public's negative perception of GE trees. We apparently made an impact. 2 days later, a rowdy crowd of demonstrators once again confronted the conference attendees as they were leaving for an exclusive dinner at the Biltmore Estate. Dressed as zombie trees and raising an awful racket with pots and pans, this group had a much more confrontational tone than the previous protest. A banner reading, "You spoil our forest, we'll spoil your dinner," greeted the conference goers as they walked from the hotel to their charter buses. While the crowd yelled, "Go home," three protesters were arrested for attempting to block the buses from exiting from the hotel. Although our week of resistance to genetically engineered trees was a huge success, while public opposition to GMO foods is on the rise, the GE tree industry has largely been flying under the radar with next to no public protest. The week of resistance was a turning point in the fight against genetically engineered trees. From now on, wherever these mad scientists go, they will meet with resistance. We mobilized hundreds of people representing an array of movements from across the East Coast in the largest protest yet against genetically engineered trees. We succeeded in disrupting conferences events twice, getting them to cancel one of their own events and making our presence known throughout the entire week. In addition, we dominated the discourse on genetically engineered trees in the media. The GE tree industry was clearly caught off guard and failed miserably at defending themselves. The week of resistance was highly successful in raising awareness around the dangers of genetically engineered trees amongst the general public. And here in California, there's an emergency rulemaking underway for against suction dredge mining. The California Department of Fish and Wildlife is proposing an emergency rulemaking to amend an existing regulation defining suction dredge gold mining. California Department of Fish and Wildlife is taking this action to close an apparent loophole that may allow activity that goes against the spirit of a legislative moratorium prohibiting the use of any vacuum or suction dredge equipment for in-stream mining. The California Department of Fish and Wildlife provided notice of a proposed emergency action earlier today. Consistent with the Administrative Procedure Act, CDFW will submit a related rulemaking package to the Office of Administrative Law no sooner than Monday, June 17th. After the Office of Administrative Law posts notice on its webpage, the public will have 5 calendar days to submit comments. Interested members of the public may want to begin monitoring OIL's webpage, www.oil.ca.gov, beginning June 17th. For specific regulatory language of CDFW's proposed emergency action or additional information about the moratorium and suction dredge gold mining in California, please visit www.dfg.ca.gov/suction dredge. If you have any questions regarding this proposed emergency action, please contact Craig Martz, CDFW Regulations Unit Manager. His number, 916-653-4681. That number again for Craig Martz, 916-653-4681. And related comments or questions to the California Department of Fish and Wildlife can also be submitted to suctiondredge@wildlife.ca.gov. And in Marin County, a battle between salmon survival and property rights is brewing in this story by Laird Harrison of KQED News. The Lagunitas Creek watershed in Marin County has been the scene of a low-key drama over the past couple of decades. The network of creeks draining towards Tamales Bay from Mount Tamalpais is home to one of the last viable wild populations of coho salmon in the Central Coast. Coho are an endangered species listed by both the state and federal governments and are getting all sorts of help to save them from extinction. Volunteers have even transported fish from drying pools to running streams. They have ripped out non-native blackberry and ivy to plant natives like bigleaf maples and strawberry trees along the creeks. Those efforts and the return of the big fish to the little creeks with the autumn rains have provided a feel-good story for Barrier TV news crews, including KQAD, I'm sure, and nature lovers alike. But the latest effort to help the coho goes further and has angered some of the people who own property along the creeks. A proposed ordinance would restrict the development within 100 feet of streams. Property owners say the ordinance will make their land less valuable. Environmentalists say the law doesn't go far enough. The Marin County Planning Commission unanimously passed the ordinance, and it goes before the Marin Board of Supervisors on June 18th. That's this coming Tuesday. As the vote approaches, both sides have stepped up their campaigning. And now we turn to biological diversity news. And there's a global outcry intensifying over the murder of a turtle biologist. The murder of Juaro Mora Sandoval, a young sea turtle biologist, remains unsolved, and now conservation groups and concerned individuals are upping the reward to find his killers to $56,000. The Center for Biological Diversity and our allies have been working intensely to raise the profile of this tragedy in Costa Rica, where Juaro was protecting nesting sea turtles from poachers. Juaro, 26, was working on the Caribbean coast near Limon, an area that has seen an increase in sea turtle poaching. He was kidnapped, tortured, and brutally murdered by armed criminals on May 30th. Four women, three Americans, and a Spaniard were also kidnapped but escaped unharmed. Conservation groups also announced last Wednesday that a memorial fund has been established. The Juaro Mora Sandoval Memorial Fund will provide immediate assistance to Juaro's family and carry out conservation projects for sea turtles in Costa Rica and his name. The Memorial Fund currently stands at $7,000. And you can go to www.biologicaldiversity.org for more information about that Memorial Fund. And here's some news from the wild and weird. Facebook billionaire builds a fantasy wedding set in the Redwoods. Napster co-founder and Facebook billionaire Sean Parker is taking media heat for his recent Redwood Forest wedding. Parker and his bride Alexandra Parker, née Lennis, exchanged vows on June 1st in a Big Sur faux fairyland, allegedly built up with ancient ruins, ponds, exotic plants draped around giant sequoia, medieval bridges, and a chimerical cottage similar to the set of television drama Game of Thrones, and there's no word on whether any dashing dwarfs or white walkers were in attendance. The construction of the grotesquely lavish Wonderland was costly both financially and, to all appearances, ecologically. Held in a sensitive old-growth forest, the event was an unpermitted and destructive build-out, potentially putting habitat and species at risk. Parker conceded to fork out $2.5 million to the California Coastal Commission for ignoring regulations for the excesses of his epic fantasy-style wedding, which cost about $4.5 million, definitely a lot more than your average wedding price tag. And in all fairness, I have to include the following, which is from Sean Parker, and he wrote, and I excerpted some of his email to The Atlantic, which was excerpted in The Atlantic. So you're not getting the full story, but this is what Sean Parker says about his wedding. When we found the Ventana campground site, it was not exactly in pristine shape. The natural ground cover was gone, and it had been paved over with black asphalt. The pictures in the California Coastal Commission report probably show what the site looked like after I removed or covered all of the black asphalt, which I found appalling, either using bulldozers or just by spreading dirt and forest brush around the area. It is also possible that this area had been cleared as a camping pad for an RV or mobile home. Regardless, an undisturbed forest would not be dirt or asphalt, and it would be covered in vegetation of some sort. I needed help in finding a forest to host the event. Finding a forest with some old-growth redwood trees that can accommodate 300 people is no easy task. I enlisted the help of Save the Redwoods to identify the site, and they suggested that the Ventana campground, which is a private campground, precisely because it is private property and not public land, and was owned and operated by a hospitality business, a hotel, and had previously been used for other events. I just wanted everything to be as authentic as possible, and I didn't want to disrupt the natural habitat. I only knew to do this because I had an existing understanding of forest restoration via my conservation work, and I also have an appreciation for what a natural redwood forest should look like because of my time spent hiking around redwood forests. We went to crazy lengths to ensure that nothing in the forest was harmed during the construction project. We used fabric liners to protect the ground from our landscaping work. We avoided planting directly in the soil. Instead, we brought in potted plants. Contrary to media reports, no redwood trees were harmed by the wedding or the construction. Everything we built for the wedding was designed to be dismantled and removed after the wedding, and has been, by the way. I inquired about the need for permits early in the process and was informed that, due to the temporary nature of the construction, no such permit would be required. The California Coastal Commission and Monterey County both offer some sort of exemptions for temporary events. Almost all the structures that you see, and that is in the photos from the California Coastal Commission and a few press pictures, were designed to be temporary. They were actually built off-site and then reassembled on the topsoil of the campground, the topsoil that he installed. There is no mortar inside them, so they just come apart like Legos and get carried off. My original agreement with the Ventana campground provided for me to restore the property to the condition in which I found it, which was anything but perfect. The campground was missing all the normal sorrel leaf ground cover and other foliage. All the greenery that you see in my photographs had to be brought in by me, since the campground had been totally stripped of any vegetation when I found it. My goal was to leave the property in much better condition than when I found it. More importantly, because I was just renting the site from a hotel, my representatives were told by relevant agencies such as the California Coastal Commission and the Monterey County Planning Commission that it was the responsibility of the property owner, the hotel, and not the hotel guest to obtain any necessary permits. How can a hotel guest paying a hotel to host their wedding be in a position to legally apply for permits covering a property that they do not own? There was neither an obligation, contractual or otherwise, nor any legal way for me to apply for permits. You should also be aware that the $2.5 million was not strictly a fine for any particular violation. We conceded to pay $1 million to the California Coastal Commission's Conservation Fund and then worked together to deploy a minimum of an additional $1.5 million in charitable contributions to help the Monterey Big Sur area. This is all work that is consistent with the kind of conservation work I'm already doing. In the last few paragraphs, there were a reply from Sean Parker to various press reports, and I excerpted that email excerpt from the Atlantic website. Back to biological diversity news. 739 miles of the U.S. coast to be protected for loggerhead turtles. Following 5 years of delay, plus petitions and a lawsuit from the Center for Biological Diversity, Oceana and Turtle Island Restoration Network, the federal government has proposed to protect more than 739 miles of critical habitat for threatened loggerhead sea turtles on their nesting beaches along the U.S. Atlantic and Gulf coasts. The decision marks the first time permanent habitat protection has been proposed for sea turtles along these coasts outside of Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands. The southeast nesting loggerheads swim thousands of miles through a obstacle course of human-made hazards, said Florida Senator Attorney Jackie Lopez. Along the way, they face serious threats from fishing nets to loss of nesting beaches through development to ocean pollution and sea level rise. Says Jackie, protected beach habitat will help ensure that when these amazing turtles reach our beaches exhausted and ready to nest, they're met with true southern hospitality. Plenty of food, good conditions for nesting, and safe beaches for hatchlings to leave their nests so they may someday return to continue the cycle of life. And a uranium mining ban has been buttressed for 1 million Grand Canyon acres. A federal judge has upheld a ban hard won by the Center for Biological Diversity and their partners, prohibiting a new uranium mining across 1 million acres in and around the Grand Canyon. The Obama administration enacted the 20-year ban last year to protect wildlands, wildlife, and water sources on public lands in the region. Predictably, the mining industry challenged that decision in court. The center and their allies, including the Havasupai tribe, to whom the area is sacred, intervened to defend the government's decision, and now they've prevailed. Our success will help protect Grand Canyon species like the highly endangered California condor, which soars along the canyon's towering walls, the delicate soils anchoring its vegetation, its holy American Indian sites, and the vitally important water sources used by those tribes, wildlife, and park visitors. A few old mines are still trying to reopen illegally, and the center and partners continue to fight for the health of this amazing natural landmark. and a suit has been filed to save border crossing endangered wolves. The Center for Biological Diversity has sued the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for letting agencies capture wolves in southern and northern Arizona and New Mexico and keep them in captivity indefinitely. This is a major step forward to help the rarest U.S. wolf recover in all the wild places it can. Our suit seeks to protect incoming roaming wolves from federal and state trapping in New Mexico and Arizona. There are wolves coming up from Mexico where Mexican gray wolves are being reintroduced and the northern Rockies, but not from the Blue Range Wolf Recovery Area where Mexican wolves are reintroduced in the United States. The permit we're challenging allows the live capture of any number of endangered wolves for any reason, including the claim that wolves are attacking livestock. The center's multiple campaigns to defend all U.S. gray wolves, including our separate suit for Mexican wolves in the Blue Range Wolf Recovery Area, which already suffer from reduced protections, as well as our campaigns to restore and recover wolves on the West Coast, could not be pushing forward strongly without your help. Thank you again for standing with us to save the wolves. And 2 million acres of protection have been proposed for Sierra Nevada frogs and toads. It's a huge win for some of the last remaining frogs and toads at high elevations in the Sierra Nevada. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has proposed Endangered Species Act protection for Sierra Nevada yellow-legged frogs and their high mountain neighbors, Yosemite toads, along with 2 million acres of protected habitat. Protections were also proposed for a population of mountain yellow-legged frogs in the southern Sierra. The proposal follows the Center for Biological Diversity's landmark 2011 agreement requiring Fish and Wildlife to make protection decisions on 757 imperiled animals and plants around the U.S. More than 50 species have been protected so far, and more than 90 have been proposed for protection. Yellow-legged frogs from across the Sierra Nevada have declined dramatically due to habitat destruction, pesticides, climate change, and introduced fish, while Yosemite toads have also disappeared from many areas, including Yosemite National Park, where they were first discovered and named. These toads are mainly threatened by livestock grazing, climate change, and pesticides. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is produced every Thursday evening at 9 o'clock. It's also rebroadcast every Friday afternoon at 3 o'clock. And if you're in Moscow, Idaho, you can listen to KRFP 92.5 FM on Monday nights at 9:30 for the Earth First Update. If you'd like to download the Earth First Update, you can go to radioforall.net. The Earth First Update is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz and is a production of Earth First Radio. We want to thank you for listening and do tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.